Hi, everyone. My name is Pete Scazzaro. I want to welcome you today to the Emotionally Healthy Leader Podcast. Great to be with you. And today's topic is the secret ingredient that unlocks a radical church community or deeply transformed church community. So this builds actually on the three previous podcasts. We talked about putting a stop to our rushed, hurried life and slowing down. That's going to be foundational to what I'm going to talk about today of developing a deeply transformed church community. Then we talked about breaking free from the deadly sin of self-promotion and how what we're going to talk about today is so counterintuitive. It doesn't look like it's actually promoting anything and going forward, but it actually is. It's so, again, counterintuitive. So we've got to be dead to ourselves. And then we talked about in the last podcast about prayer as attunement and letting go and participating in the life of what God is doing more than telling God what to do. And so we're going to be listening to God as part of this process. So this podcast, which we're calling the secret ingredient to that unlocks a radical church community or a deeply transformed church community, is really about spaciousness and unhurry as well. But it's applied to our relationships with others, especially with the core people God's entrusted to us, our teams, and how to actually engage them in a way that develops and forms a whole community that's deeply transformed. So this is going to lead to actual radical transformation in the church community, but also in your team, but also in you, because God's going to meet you as well. So again, whether you're leading a church, a parachurch, a mission, a team, a marketplace team, even your family, volunteer or paid, this applies to you. But also, again, it's the way to develop mothers and fathers of the faith, and you in the process are going to get revelation and be transformed in ways that you never imagined, in very surprising ways. So again, the reason I call it the secret ingredient is we get so focused on the vision and progress and the mission that we think this takes too much time, what I'm going to talk about here today. And we think it's going to actually hinder or slow down our mission. And so we want to do the bare minimum with our team to get them moving forward. And while it seems slow, we actually find out and discover as we get into it that it actually accelerates God's mission in ways, again, beyond anything we ever imagined. And actually, it's much slower not to do it in terms of developing a radical church community or countercultural community. So my own history, I missed it for years. I believed in, okay, we're going to develop a radical church community in our church. I preached it. I prayed for it. I tried to model it. I gave my life to it for years. And what we were supposed to look like. And I was so passionate for it. I structured our church around small groups and community gatherings, et cetera, and great biblical teaching. But we weren't that different from the world around us. And there was still lots of anger floating around and unresolved conflicts and tensions that people didn't know how to resolve and triggers and folks not loving enemies and not speaking clearly and respectfully to one another, not listening to each other, folks being highly triggered. And I even saw the relational immaturity in my own team, my core team. And so I found myself angry a lot and frustrated a lot. And we didn't have skills at the time that we call emotionally healthy relationship skills. I wasn't highly differentiated. I had a poor understanding of power. And I used to hope that certain people would leave because it was such a mess, you know? And then I tried learning from the best business practices and brought in consultants and read all the excellent leadership books out there. And I did the corporate thing. And I figured if they could build a great company, I could apply some of those principles to here in a church. And it's minimally helpful. And I just didn't know what to do. How do we form this community Jesus talked about, that the world would be thirsty for Jesus by watching the way that we love each other, where we really were radically transformed by Jesus. Now, I imagine many of you did what I did, which was I did the standard way of trying to approach it. Because you're responsible to get the work done and expand the mission, just like I was. it reminds me of a person who called me recently, and he has a large church, about 50, 75 staff. And he called me because he was frustrated with the staff team. And the church was growing. He fortunately remarked on how quickly the church was growing and opening new campuses and how amazing it was. At the same time, he was lamenting that there was so much emotional immaturity among his team, and he was completely exasperated by it. And so he was in the middle of doing a sermon series on my books, Emotional Healthy Discipleship, Emotional Healthy Leadership. And he really wanted me to come in for a one-day fix, do a seminar, have them read a book, but fix this thing. And I said, well, it's going to be a little larger than that. So my turning point in discovering and developing what I'm calling the secret ingredient happened when I slowed down for God and for myself and began this journey that we call emotionally healthy discipleship. It started with me. I began to do, for the first time, the integration of emotional health or maturity into my spiritual maturity. That was a revolution. And I began to learn some basic skills of how do I speak clearly and respectfully and honestly in a timely fashion and not lie? And how do I get a hold of my values and articulate them with folks in a way that's respectful? And I realized I can't give what I don't possess. And as I began to change and be transformed myself, I began to engage conflict differently. I began to have clean fights, not dirty fights. I began to speak respectfully, and I began to do genograms with myself and look how my family of origin was impacting how I approached certain people or didn't approach certain people. And I began to get a hold of what to do when something was bothering me, when my values were being violated, something we call a ladder of integrity. That happens a lot when you're in leadership. And what do I do when a team member is late a lot for team meetings? What do I do when a person's always seems, one of my staff's always out of control? Life's always so chaotic for them. Or what do I do when someone's grumpy in a meeting and consistently, and they're taking up a lot of space, but they're unaware that they're even doing so? Or what do I do when someone says they're doing something as their job, but they're actually not getting it done or showing up, whether it's a volunteer for children's church ministry or the worship ministry, or they're serving on the board, but they're actually not, their life is not exemplary. What do I do? And or someone's creating dissension by their tone of voice or remarks, or again, doing something immature. And so I began to get equipped, self-aware of my own inner life, and began to learn some skills for my own relationships. And it was actually a turning point for me. It was like, whoa. And so as I began to change, I just wanted to start bringing it to my team around me. And it really changed the way I related to my team, because I actually had some tools and knew what to do for the first time. And I realized that my team is not a means to an end. They actually are, they're like core to the work itself. And they are the work to which God has called me to. And that, I think of Jesus with the 3 and the 12 and the 70, and then he had the 500 and the multitudes. Well, in the same way, I realized for each of us, God's given us a few, the 3, the 12, the few folks to whom God's entrusted to our care, our inner team. Again, whether it's your ministry that you're working with or your family, it could be your leadership team, it could be your board. And then he's given you them, and then it spreads out from there to the wider masses. But we're concerned, of course, for building a radical church community. And it's concentric circles going out, but it starts with the core of you and then, of course, your team. So it began with me first slowing down and beginning to get some retooling myself. And so, again, let me recommend to you our most recent ebook, our free ebook. It's called Spaciousness, Avoiding the 8 Traps That Steal Your Margin. It's at emotionallyhealthy.org/spaciousness. That's emotionallyhealthy.org/spaciousness. It's a tremendous ebook. It's free. It's short. But how do you avoid those traps that steal your margin? Because to do this takes spaciousness. I'm going to model for it for you in just a few minutes how to actually do it when you sit down with someone. But again, it begins with you. So you want to pick up that ebook. But also at the same time, let me encourage you to pick up the Emotionally Healthy Relationships course, which you can preview for free at emotionallyhealthy.org/preview, and get exposed to some of the skills I just mentioned to you and some of these materials we've developed over the last 28, 29 years, because they're gold. It starts with you, and then you won't be able to help bringing it to your team around you, and you'll have some tools with which to do so. But again, we forget that Jesus didn't just live and die and rise and ascend to heaven for our sins. We fail to see so often the way that he interacted and modeled for us working with a team. I mean, he had his 12, and his strategy was really clear. I mean, he didn't have to choose the 12 and develop them over that three-year period. He was extremely intentional because he was thinking about the book of Acts. He was thinking about the wider church. He was thinking about us 2,000 years later. He had a big long-term vision. You and I need a big long-term vision for a radically transformed church community. And so for Jesus, he was painstaking in working with his team. In fact, he had a lot of spaciousness and unhurry to do it. I took one half a chapter from Luke chapter 9. And I want you to just let me list for you what he did in succession in only like 26 to 30 verses with the 12 disciples. It begins, he's on the Mount of Transfiguration. He appears before him in all his glory. And Peter, James, and John are making wrong plans. And he gets corrected by God saying, listen to him. So he's going off. He gets corrected very personally. Listen to him about the cross and the way this is going to be. And then they come down from the mountain. There's a boy with an unclean spirit, and they can't cast out the demon. And Jesus teaches them very directly, this kind can only come out by prayer. Immediately after that, the 12 disciples start arguing, who's the greatest? I'm the greatest. You're the greatest. And Jesus takes a child very carefully, painstakingly, puts the child in the midst of them and says, whoever is least among you is the greatest. Right after that, the 12 disciples try to stop someone who's casting out demons in the name of Jesus, but he's not one of the 12. And Jesus corrects them and says, he who is not against you is for you. Basically, don't stop them. And then finally, right after that, Jesus sends them into a Samaritan village on his way to Jerusalem. And this Samaritan village rejects Jesus. And James and John want to call down fire from heaven and punish that village. And Jesus rebukes them. And so again, we see Jesus investing deeply and specifically in his core team to mold them, to shape them. Why? So when they're leading the community, the church, which is going to happen in the book of Acts, they're going to know what to do. And they're going to build a radical church community that's going to make the world thirsty for Jesus, which is what we're trying to do. And it'll spread to the entire world. So again, the 12 disciples, having had that experience with Jesus, they couldn't help but do it after they took leadership. So let me now break it down for you. What might this look like for you with individual people who are in your core, your team? So I'm going to give you some guidelines to structure it. So I'm going to talk about the pre-meeting, and then the meeting itself, and then the post-meeting. Okay, so before the meeting, when you meet with them one-on-one, and then after the meeting. And again, I'm calling this a secret ingredient that unlocks a radical church community, a deeply transformed church community, because they're worth it and they're never going to forget it. And actually, you're going to learn in the process as well. So let's begin. And then I'll deal with a few frequently asked questions afterwards that come out of this as well. So again, there's three segments to meeting with someone. The first is before you meet, or the pre-meeting, is that you're going to pray for the people who are on your core team. Again, whether it's your volunteer team, your staff team, your work team, folks that you're responsible for, and you bring each one of them by name before God, and you listen. You're profoundly aware what a privilege it is to lead anybody in the name of Jesus, and you recognize that God's given you a role in their life. And so you pray for them, and you're listening to whatever God maybe might say something to you. And then in this pre-meeting stage, you're pondering and thinking about them. You're paying attention to the little things. Now, what I mean by that is this. So for example, someone sends you an email and says they're going to do something by Thursday for you. They're going to send you something or deliver something to you by Thursday, but they never do. And you begin to pay attention to that. Oh, they didn't do that. In fact, this is the second time they didn't do that. Said they were going to do something and didn't follow through. Or you watch someone on your team and you realize, oh, they're avoiding conflict over here. And you observe that. Or someone in a meeting had a very sarcastic and highly charged comment, and some frustration came out, and you said to yourself, what's that all about? You wondered, was the issue they're mentioning really the issue? Are they with someone else that is very exhausted, they're on your team, and they're not taking care of themselves. They're just doing good, caring for everybody else, but they themselves are depleted. Or someone else who's just super task performer, but they're driving, and you're just concerned that they're driving people and not actually caring for their team. So you're observing these things, you're paying attention, and then you actually hopefully have meetings with them. And this is, you're actually intentional. You're praying, thinking in advance about the meeting, and then you set up a meeting. And again, time depending, how long should it be, depends on your relationship and what their responsibilities are and your responsibilities and all that. But you meet with them. And hopefully in an unhurried environment, eye to eye, you know, knee to knee, face to face, and you begin to ask them some questions about, you know, ask them questions. Now, if you're afraid to ask any questions, that's often the question you surely want to ask. But we're reframing what's happening in their lives for them. So, for example, the fellow who's not responding to emails or saying he's going to do something by Thursday and he doesn't do it, the second time he's done it, and you just basically bring it up to him. Say, you know, you said, Joe, that you would respond by Thursday and give me an answer about this, but you didn't. And then it happened the following week as well, where you said you'd do something by a certain date and it didn't happen. Just help me understand, like, what's going on with you. And you listen. You get some, fill it out. Or the person in the staff meeting or team meeting who had a kind of a sarcastic or highly charged comment, you say to him, like, what's going on? Tell me about that. You had a lot of emotion about what we were talking about, and I just wondered what was going on there. And you begin to explore it, and and actually stuff begins to come out. Or the person who's on your staff who's exhausted and burnt out because she's doing so much, but she's not taking care of herself. And you begin to explore that with her. And you want to get at vulnerabilities and their emotional triggers and what roadblocks they're encountering. I had a board member who would say he was going to do something very important. It's actually recently, but didn't do it, didn't follow through. And so I actually said, okay, this is significant. And I called him and I said, you know, you said you were going to be engaged in this activity for the whole board and the ministry, but you didn't do it. And I said, help me understand, like, what happened. And then he went on a whole big thing. So I'm asking questions initially, and then I'm listening, and I'm reframing in a different way what's going on for them, for their own formation and development. So for the board member, I said, you know, you said you would do that. Help me understand, like, why you didn't. And then it comes out that he says, I have a hard time saying no to anybody. I have a consistent pattern of saying yes to things and not following through because I overfunction. And of course, it went back to his genogram, his family of origin. And I commended him for at least, you know, he was honest about it. And he says, I really can't do this, Pete. I said I could, but I can't. I don't have the time or the space. And it was a great meeting. But then we talked about his general pattern of leadership and his need to embrace his limits and change the way he was living in his family of origin, of saying yes to everybody and pleasing everybody, to actually getting a hold of what's God asked him to do and being faithful to that. And so it was, and I've had multiple follow-through conversations with him ever since that event, but it was a very big initial conversation with him. And the person who came to the staff meeting was highly charged. He actually was in conflict with somebody, but he was so averse to conflict, he didn't go to the person. He contained all this frustration and anger inside of him, and it came out in just a weird way about something unrelated. And so I coached him a bit. You know, about, okay, listen, time out. So this person hurt you. They don't know they even hurt you, but you didn't go to them and explore it. And so you're mind reading now about the whole ministry as a whole. And so it was a great moment of discipleship. I eventually had a conversation one-on-one with the guy, and it was great. Same thing with the woman on staff who wasn't taking care of herself, and helping her set up a blue sky day for dreaming and self-care and doing what she loved to do and writing music and putting that in her schedule. And then, you know, following up later about how did it go. But these were and again, the person not following through on emails, the same thing, like exploring what's that about. And again, fear of I'm an authority, don't want to disappoint people in authority. So I say things I'm not going to follow through on anyway. So we just talked all about that, and it was fantastic. And sometimes I'll even role play with people if possible, because there's patterns of the way that they've been doing life a certain way. And it helps them imagine, wow, there's a different way to do life, because we're breaking patterns of the way they've been functioning for generations and doing formation. And then the third part is really after that meeting's over. And so I'm praying again, because I hold the team in prayer. I hold them before God. I consider it one of my primary roles as a leader is I pray for and hold before God each member of my team prayerfully. And I listen, kind of like Jesus and the 12, or three and then the 12. And I'm making space for them in my life. They're not simply a means to get something done. I'm holding them before God. So I remember, of course, the conversations I've had. And now I'm just open to further insights that God might have for me, because I get so many good insights or thoughts about after I'm with them. Oh, hey, you want to read this book or listen to this podcast or check this out over here, but I'm resourcing them. My best ideas come often afterwards. Again, because as they experience this on a regular basis with me or with you, they will just naturally do it with the people on their teams. And this is how the whole community is radically transformed. That's the power of it. It's slow. Again, remember how slow it was with Jesus and the 12. And he was constantly doing follow-up. And how slowly they learned. I mean, he would have to repeat the same things over and over again. I mean, they were arguing about who's the greatest, not just in the beginning of the ministry, but at the very end, right before the cross, because he's, in a sense, he's reparenting them. He's forming them. Again, we want to grow into being the most mature people in the room. That's our goal always as leaders. And then we bring everybody with us, right? Who we are is more important than what we do. And it's the state of our being that we're transmitting to those whom we lead. As goes the leader, so goes the church, or so goes the ministry, so goes the team. But it's you first. And I like the saying, minimally transformed leaders will result in minimally transformed teams, which results in minimally transformed communities. So having this kind of spaciousness and unhurry in your life for others is actually one of the most important tasks for every leader, and especially for Christian leaders. We're seeking to form Christ in people. And so we're not just concerned about the task of, you know, growing our ministry or excellence, whatever particular calling God's put in your life. We're actually concerned about the people that he's put on our team. And we're giving ourselves to them, creating space in our lives that they are actually core to the mission, not something extra. Now, let me close with four frequently asked questions I get all the time when I talk about this, which I trust will help fill this out a bit for you. The first is this: how do I get started, Pete? Well, you get started with you and your development. And you've got to begin to do the hard work of learning. And so I talked about earlier, you want to pick up emotionally healthy relationships as a start, that course. Again, go to emotionallyhealthy.org/preview. Check it out on our website. Download it. Watch the skills. Begin to master them in your own life. And you want to work, you want to do the hard work of differentiation. That is, who are you? How did God uniquely make you? What's that seed he put in you that's meant to blossom into something beautiful? That you get your hold of your own role and soul, that you're living with integrity, and you begin to bring that to those around you. Now, I'm always learning on how to better serve and mentor those around me that I'm mentoring. And so I'm always looking for places to learn and grow, getting wise counsel, people I call up. And so I've hit situations, I've had to learn so much over these decades about how do I mentor well my team. It's one thing to create the space, begin to have meetings, then I would hit blockages. Like, I'm not sure what to do about this. And I had a slew of wise older mentors that I would go to along the way, and I still go to when I get stuck. And it's been super helpful to get other feedbacks. And again, you might want to watch on our website, we have a training vault for when you teach the Emotionally Healthy Discipleship course, Spirituality and Emotionally Healthy Relationships, and it's free. And you can watch me actually coach some people in some of the skills, and Jerry coach some people in Genneagram, in their grief and loss chart. Go check it out. It's free at emotionallyhealthy.org/training. And you'll see in the level 2 section of that training, you can watch some videos of us actually mentoring some people one-on-one. And I think you might find it helpful because it's you got to learn some new skills, and then you've got to learn some new language, and then you intentionally follow it up, and that's how you begin to create a radically transformed culture. So it's new skills plus new language plus intentional follow-up, and that produces a radically transformed culture. Second frequently asked question is this. So the first one is, it starts with you in your own development. So the most loving thing you can do for those around you is be growing and learning in Jesus. Number 2 is, where do I start when there's so many issues before me on my team? There's so many people, so much out of order. Everyone is a mess, Pete. I've heard that actually. I actually felt that myself, beginning with me. So what I did was I prioritized those in the most significant positions of influence, which in my case at that time was our pastoral staff team. And I began to do with them one by one. And then I moved to the board and others over the years. So that's how I began. I knew I couldn't tackle everything at once. I began slowly. But then I began to be present with the people I was with along the way in the ministry as a whole. So just like Jesus, we see Jesus interacting with, for example, Nicodemus in a unique way, with the Samaritan woman in a unique way, with the woman with the issue of blood in a unique way, with Zacchaeus in a unique way, with Simon the Pharisee differently, and the blind man. Each person is so unique because he's present with himself and he's present with them. And so that began to change the way I even was with people on a Sunday morning where there was, you know, so many people all around me. But I began to just slow it down. And even though I couldn't go into kind of depth I would go with my team, I was sensitive to God and to myself, and I was approaching it differently. And I'd encourage you to do the same. Third frequently asked question is, Pete, I just don't have time. I just don't have time for this. And well, let me say this to you. If you don't have time, it costs way more time not to do it, because you end up having to deal with so much fallout and so many other problems. A healthy community, they don't just come to you. They don't come to you well-formed. It takes us investing in them. And we want to develop folks who are mothers and fathers of the faith. And you start slow. You're listening to God about your pace. You're praying, but you're moving intentionally to invest in your team. Again, you can't tackle it all at once. But if you don't, it costs way more time not to. Again, you'll need prayer and discernment as to your limits and whom and how God is asking you to approach your team. So even now, I've upped my engagement with my board at Emotionally Healthy Discipleship, realizing I really need to invest in them individually, not just as a group. But at the same time, recognizing my limits in that. The fourth common frequently asked question is this: Pete, no one's ever done this for me, so I don't have any models. Well, that was the case with me as well. Let me just say this. For some reason, this was in God's overall plan for you and for me, if that's the case. But that God wants to use that to light a fire in you, that you will be passionate to invest in the next generation. You'll be passionate to give to people who are looking to you for leadership what you never got, that you would have loved in your 20s and 30s and maybe early 40s. And again, that let that be a burden for you. For me, I'm passionate to invest in the next generation because I so longed for it in my 20s and 30s and so many mistakes in 40s and so many mistakes could have been avoided if I'd had that. So may God put a fire in you for that. So again, your team, your core, your 3 and 12 that God's put around you, they are the ministry. They are core to the ministry that God's called you to do. And that they are the secret ingredient that unlocks a radical church community that we want through the church, through our ministries, offer Jesus to the world. So let me invite you again as we close here to download that free ebook called Spaciousness, eight traps to avoid that steal your margin. Go to emotionallyhealthy.org/spaciousness. That's emotionallyhealthy.org/spaciousness. And check out Emotionally Healthy Relationships and Emotionally Spirituality, those courses, and dive into them. Begin to get some retraining yourself for what God has for you in the future. So may the Lord bless you, and may you rely and know the love of God, for God is love. And may that love permeate through you, to your team, through your community, and then by God's grace to the world around you. Have a great day. Blessings.